This is Dr. David Mathewson in his teaching on New Testament Greek 3. This is session number 4, The Article.
In this session, we want to spend some time talking about one of the smaller parts of speech in the Greek language, and that is the article. Notice I didn't call it the definite article. There's a reason for that, and we'll talk about that. Let me make some comments just generally about the article as far as its function in Greek and kind of some things to avoid. The first thing is, as I just said, it's probably not accurate, although I still hear people referring to it in the article as the definite article. And there's two reasons for why that probably is not the case. Number one is that Greek does not have an indefinite article, suggesting that it's not appropriate then to say this is the definite article, because unlike the English example, or the English language, for example, that does have an indefinite a or an, Greek does not have an indefinite article. It does have ways of doing things similar to an indefinite article in English, but it does not have an indefinite article, so it's probably not appropriate to call the article definite or the definite article in Greek. The other thing is, and we'll see this in one of the functions that we look at, is that the article in Greek does not always make something definite. And a noun can lack an article and still be definite. So that means that, the idea that whenever you see an article in Greek, it makes it definite or specific or something like that is probably an inadequate understanding and description of the article in Greek. So let's talk a little bit about the article and what it does and how it functions. Again, I only want to focus on a handful of usages, or a couple, actually two or three, maybe four usages, and then talk about briefly a couple of very common rules in the history of study of the Greek language that have kind of have risen up that are meant to describe the use of the article that I think, again, have often been sometimes misused or misunderstood in what they are saying. The first use of the Greek article that I want to describe is that It does function often to specify a certain object, a specific object, when it's used with a noun. On the other hand, sometimes the article can be used in a categorical fashion. That is, it will place a noun within a larger category. For example, the verse in the New Testament, the worker is worthy of his wages. The worker has an article, that noun worker has an article with it, yet that's not specifying a specific person. It's placing a person as part of a larger category. So often you'll find the article in Greek used categorically to place a noun, usually a person, in a larger, as belonging to a larger category. The worker is worthy. And often the other thing too that is true of translating articles is just because you see an article in Greek does not mean that you will supply one in your English translation. Because, number one, as I said, the article in Greek is not definite. It doesn't always make a noun definite, whereas in English it usually does. And number two, that going further with that, is the Greek article is not doing necessarily the same thing as the English article does. So there's no one-to-one correspondence. Sometimes you will use the article, in English, when you find one in Greek. At other times, you won't. Sometimes when there isn't an article in Greek, you will use one in English because that's the way we use our language and the way we speak, especially if in the context it's definite, referring to a definite entity without an article, we will tend to include one in English. And sometimes, you know, it's just the way we speak and using an article in certain situations where in Greek there wouldn't be one, or vice versa. So kind of take that from your knowledge and remove that and just, you know, understand the presence or absence of the article in Greek may not translate to the presence or absence of an article in your English translation. But the categorical, the worker is worthy of his wages. The worker, there we do use the article to translate it. But in this example, the worker is part of a broader category. And again, only the context can tell you that. And the worker is worthy of his wages is kind of a proverbial type of statement anyway. Two other usages of the article that I want you to pay close attention to. First of all, is the use of the article as a substantivizer. Say that fast 5 times. Substantivizer. That's simply a technical term for the fact that an article can be used to turn virtually anything into a noun, any part of speech. For example, participles. A participle, we'll look at participles later. Hopefully you learn that there's a category called substantival participle, where a participle can take an article, and that article serves to demonstrate that the participle is functioning as a noun. An adverb can function as a noun. And for example, a good example of this is found in Colossians chapter 3, and a passage that you're familiar with. Therefore, if you have been raised together with Christ, seek the things that are above. Ta ano. I believe this is an adverb, ano, above. But notice it has an article in front of it. The article serves to turn that into a substantive. And most English translations will translate it the things above or something like that. There's no, you know, precise way of getting exactly to the fact that this is substantive, but that's a good, I think that's a good way of translating it. Seek the things above. But do you see this is an adverb in form as far as a part of speech, but the article turns it into a substantive. It's the direct object of the command to seek in Colossians 3 and verse 1. And we could multiply examples of where the article can be used to turn just about anything into a noun or into a substantive. Another category you've already learned that you're familiar with that we'll look at in the next lecture on adjectives and adverbs is substantival adjectives. Adjectives can also be turned into nouns or substantives by the use of the article. So we might say something like, hoi agathoi, from agathos, the adjective good. By putting an article in front of it, we can turn it into a substantive. The good men, the good people, or whatever. So the article, a very important function of the article, is to turn virtually any part of speech, any word, whether adverbs or participles or adjectives and even other forms, even sometimes combinations of words, into a substantive, into a noun. And they'll function just like a noun does, direct object or indirect object or whatever. A fourth use, and the last one that we'll refer to, let me refer to one other use of the article just quickly, just because it's very different from English. Words such as, words that are abstract. Often the categories referred to in grammars as abstract nouns. Words that often are abstract nouns, like sometimes emotions, like love or hope or truth, that we tend not to use an article with it. We in English, we usually don't refer to the love or the hope or the truth. That one we can sometimes. But especially love, we usually don't refer to the love or something like that. Where in Greek, you'll often find articles used with abstract nouns to give them when they're given a specific application in a context. And in English, we will tend not to use articles with those in our English translation, where Greek often did use articles with abstract type nouns. Again, such as a common one is agape. You'll often find that with an article, though very seldom will you ever find an English translation translating it the love. The fifth usage and the last usage of the article that I think is kind of interesting and can be important is what is known as the anaphoric use of the article. And what this is the anaphoric use of the article is where the article is used to point you back to a previous mention of a word, to say, this is the same thing I just mentioned previously. It's the same one. You'll often find this in narrative literature, but you'll find it sometimes in Paul's letters as well. But it's fairly common in narrative literature. And what happens in narrative literature is usually, and here's a good example where the article does not always make something definite. Often in narrative, you will find a noun, an entity or a person or something introduced in the narrative for the first time, and it will not have an article. The fancy term for that is anarthrous. Then, subsequent references to that same noun, using the same noun in Greek, but subsequent references to that same thing will have the article. I'll just put article or articular. However many times it's mentioned, it will often have the article, and the article is functioning anaphorically to point you back to the first mention, to say, this is the same one that I first mentioned. A good example of that is found in the book of Revelation and chapter 5. And in Revelation chapter 5, actually chapter 4 is the one I want to look at first. Chapter 4. In chapter 4 and verse 2, this is where John is taken up to heaven to see the heavenly vision of the throne room. And John's going to describe what he saw. And the first thing he saw is in verse 2, immediately I was in the Spirit, and behold, a throne. Let me write this out. Behold, a throne, thronos. And notice, it doesn't lack an article. Although it's definite, John's referring to a specific throne that he saw, but it lacks an article. Now, when you read down through the rest of the book of Revelation, rest of the chapter of Revelation 4, every time that throne is mentioned again, it has an article. Verse 2, there was a throne laid in heaven, and upon the throne, ton thronon, was one seated. And the one seated was had the appearance of jasper, etc. And there's a rainbow surrounding the throne, to Thranu. And around the throne, to Thranu, verse 4. So every time the throne is referred to, after this first mention in verse 2, it has the article, the anaphoric article. It functions to provide cohesion in the context, and it points you back to the, this is the exact same throne. Now, you'll notice a curious reader or a reader paying attention will notice that the word throne occurs in verse 4 again without the article. And around the throne, to Thranu, were thrones, Thranus. No article. It's the same word. Why? Because now he's talking about different thrones. These are the thrones that the 24 elders sit on. And when that word occurs, Thranus, again, the plural thrones of the 24 elders, when that occurs again, it has the article. So Revelation chapter 4 is a good example of this use of the anaphoric article, where something that's introduced for the first time will not have an article, but then when it's picked up in the rest of the discourse, the anaphoric article will occur to point you back to the first mention. The same is true in chapter 5 of the Lamb. When the Lamb, Arnion, is first mentioned in chapter 5, no article. Wherever Lamb occurs in the rest of the chapter, there is an article with it. So the anaphoric article is an important and kind of interesting use of the article, and often functions to provide cohesion and coherence within a discourse. It does occur in the epistles sometimes, not to the extent that you find it often in narrative. So those are five important functions of the article that you hopefully will equip you to deal with at least the most important and some of the more common uses of the article throughout the Greek New Testament. Before we leave the article, what I want to do is just briefly mention a couple of very common, popular, and important rules that in the history of the Greek language have grown up around the use of the article and are often used to discuss important usages and functions of the article. One of them is known as Colwell's rule. And these rules are named after the persons that gave them expression. And Colwell basically was dealing with this construction. We've seen this already. Subject, linking verb, which is usually a me, and predicate nominative. And Colwell studied a bunch of the usages of this in the Greek New Testament and came up with a rule where he said when the predicate nominative comes first, remember, Greek doesn't depend primarily on word order, but he said when the predicate nominative comes first in this kind of a sentence, we're only talking about this kind of a sentence, not other kinds, but when the predicate nominative comes first and it's definite, he said, it will lack the article. Now notice what he did not say. He did not say, when the predicate nominative comes first and lacks the article, it will be definite. Does everyone see that? In other words, this is not a rule to determine whether the predicate nominative is definite or not. Colwell said, if the predicate nominative is already definite, if you've determined it's definite by other means in the context, so you have to know that it's definite first, and if it comes first, then it will lack the article. So this is not a rule, although a lot of older grammars misunderstood this or misrepresented it and used it as a means of determining that a predicate nominative without an article as definite. And they said, if the predicate nominative comes first and doesn't have the article, it's definite. That's not what Caldwell said. He said, if the predicate nominative is definite based on the context, and if it comes first, then it lacks an article. In other words, he was just observing a pattern. He wasn't giving you, here's a way to determine whether the predicate nominative is definite or not. He's simply observing a pattern. Definite predicate nominatives, when they come first, would lack the article. And so this is probably not something that will give you exegetical insight. It's more to indicate a pattern that Caldwell observed, in my view. A good example of this at work is found in the really popular passage, and that is John chapter 1, verse 1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and Theos ein halagos. Now, does Caldwell's rule work? Some have used it to say, his rule proves that Theos is definite. And as some of you may know, a lot of other cults and religious movements would say, we should translate the Word was a God. He was not the God of the Old Testament. He was just a divine being, not the God that created the heavens and the earth. He was just a God, and they'd say the lack of the article shows that. And some have applied to Caldwell and said, no, Caldwell's rule proves that here's the predicate nominative, and it comes at the beginning, and it doesn't have an article, so it's definite. Oh, that's not what Caldwell said. This actually fits Caldwell's rule because I think from the context, Theos is definite. It's referring to the God of the Old Testament. And it's identifying the Word with God. And so it works because the context demonstrates that Theos is definite. And it comes at the beginning and it lacks the article. So it fits the pattern. But Caldwell's rule doesn't tell us whether Theos is definite, the God, or just a God. Caldwell's rule doesn't tell us that. His rule fits the pattern that Theos, based on the context, is definite, and it comes first and therefore lacks the article. Instead, what is going on here? I think, to go back to our discussion of the nominative case, in our discussion of cases, notice, remember we said one of the functions of the article, or one of the ways to determine which one's the predicate nominative and which one is the subject, is the article. In other words, why does Theos lack an article? Because John is trying to show that Logos is the subject. If Theos had an article, that would make it the direct object. And that's not what John wants to do. Logos is the subject, and so it has the article, and Theos lacks the article to show that it is the predicate nominative. So you have subject, linking verb, and predicate nominative. And so the presence or absence of the article has nothing to do with whether Theos is definite. The context does. And I think the context warrants translating it capital G. The Word was God, the creator of the universe, the God of the Old Testament. The Word was God. And the Theos lacks the article because John wants to show this is the predicate nominative. Logos has the article to show you that it is the subject. And so the Word was God, I think, is the valid translation. The other rule that has grown up around articles is called the Granville-Sharp rule. I think it has an E in it. Granville-Sharp's rule. And this also had to do with the article. What Granville-Sharp was dealing with this kind of a construction. Article plus a noun plus chi plus another noun. So, again, we're only talking about this kind of construction. And by the way, in that order, article, noun, chi, noun. And Sharpe's rule had to do with the function of that article, of the article. And what Granville Sharpe said, and let me read it for you, because again, this is one that people often, or scholars in the past, have frequently gotten wrong or misunderstood. Granville Sharpe's rule was, actually there is no E in it. Granville Sharpe's rule said this. When you have two nouns connected by chi and only preceded by one article, and when those nouns they're both singular and personal. That's important. He said both of these nouns had to be singular and personal, referring to persons. He said when that's the case, the two nouns relate to each other or even refer to the same person. He did not say that it referred to plurals, and he did not say that it referred to impersonal things. He only said it referred to persons, and when they were both singular. When that's the case, the article served to join them together, where they related to each other, referred to the same person. Again, sometimes people have taken that, and every time you see article, noun, chi, noun, they've said these two nouns refer to the same thing. Well, that's not true, because they evoke Granville Sharpe's rule. But Sharpe's rule, he never said that. He limited his observation to when you have article, noun, chi, noun, those two nouns, if they're personal and if they're singular, the second one relates to the first one. His wording was the latter, which would be the second noun, the latter always relates to the same person that is expressed or described in the first one. That was his wording. And again, he limited that to singular personal nouns. So, for example, where that might be important is in the... A good example of that is in 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 15, which the blessed and only ruler will show in his time, the King of kings and Lord of lords. There is an article before king and lord, and they're both personal, they're both singular, and so they both refer to the same person, what's further described as the blessed and only ruler. So, the takeaway is, make sure, especially when you're using commentaries and grammars that evoke Caldwell or Sharpe's rule, make sure they're using it correctly. Make sure they're using it in the way that Sharpe and Caldwell intended and as they articulated. Often they're used to demonstrate things that may still be right, but they're using the rule in the incorrect way. Again, Caldwell only said, if the predicate nominative is already determined to be definite by other means, and it comes first, then it tends to lack the article. So he's basically just observing a pattern, not establishing a rule to show this is definite or not. And then Sharpe's rule. When you have article, noun, chi, noun, if the two nouns preceded by the article, if the two nouns are singular and personal, the second noun relates to and is identified with the first noun. But again, it's only for personal and singular nouns. So, again, making sure that we understand those rules correctly and what they're meant for and how to use them in our exegesis. So the article can be a very important feature of the Greek language. It's the smallest feature, so avoid reading too much into it. Avoid drawing theology off of the presence or absence of the article. Work with the handful of examples that we demonstrated. And it's important to ask why the article is there at times, but to keep it in perspective as far as what it's doing and how important it is for exegesis.
This is Dr. David Mathewson in his teaching on New Testament Greek 3. This is session number 4, The Article.